Welcome to episode 11 of The End Line. I'm your host, Jeff Kasmer, and we're recording the evening of Tuesday, April 30th. It's a little bit dark in the land of the Colorado Rapids, but we're here to save the day with...
I'm Abby. I'm from the Burgundy Wave.
I'm Connor Cape. I'm the voice of the Colorado Rapids on the Altitude Sports Radio Network, and I just wanted to say that Mercedes-Benz Stadium is the finest venue in the world.
Cosign.
Why does he always pick before my intro to do that stuff?
Well, you didn't do an intro.
I know. I'm Jess Howland with MLS Female.
And you agree that Mercedes-Benz Stadium is the finest venue in the world.
Okay, so...
No, but it's pretty.
I think we can...
Not just
can we
pretty,
differentiate
though,
between
incredible.
Venue and experience?
Experience is so difficult to, like, nail down. Because then it's LAFC, Sporting,
yes.
Portland. Like,
yes.
Those experiences are great. Atlanta's crowd on Saturday was kind of mellow.
Yeah.
Maybe it was a sleepy kickoff. Maybe it's the fact that they're frustrated... Or they were just really terrified at the thought of losing another home game. But they were really, like, chill. They were laid back.
Yeah.
But the venue itself.
Robin wasn't there.
The venue itself is something else. It's unlike anything else.
I almost shed a tear.
When I stepped out of the little entrance tunnel into 76,000 people in there, it's visually stunning. In that way, you almost have a vertigo looking up at the stadium as far as, like, is this a real thing?
I'm seeing
it's
there?
So big. I went to the MLS Cup.
You went to MLS Cup last year?
Yeah.
Oh, so you know exactly what we're talking about.
Yeah,
was the roof open?
It was not. It was pouring rain.
When the roof opened.
That was the same for the All-Star game.
The roof opening, like, just having that indoor feel and then looking up and seeing blue sky.
Yeah. I didn't actually know the roof opened until you posted the tweet about it.
It didn't open at first. It was like a $5 billion mistake or something like that.
Oops.
But it was like we were walking because we got off the bus and we're walking, like, you know, in the back bowels of Mercedes-Benz. And then you turn a corner and you can see through the tunnel and you can see all the way out onto the field and you can see the seats. And that's when you see, like, how tall it is. But it's just a little sliver of it.
Yeah.
It's incredible.
Yeah.
It was jaw-dropping. Literally jaw-dropping. My jaw dropped.
Were you, I guess, in the broadcast booth, you were up a ways, but at first you were down at those, like, field level kind of areas. The only other place I've ever seen that is DC United's new stadium is similar, where you're the concourse that you walk around, like, getting your food and stuff is exactly at field level. And it's just an unusual perspective when you walk between sections and you're like, whoa, there's, like, the field and the players and they're at my level. You're accustomed to being up and kind of looking down towards them. All right, so that's enough fun stuff. A couple weeks ago...
On to the sad stuff.
Connor, you said that we have to talk about the most important thing first.
MLS MVP, Carlos Vela.
And the thing that everybody's talking about is the post-game comments. Here is a quote from the video posted on MLSsoccer.com.
I just think it's going to take time, Abby. I think changing a team that was where we picked it up, which was down the bottom of the league. You know, we still have several players that are being paid that are not actually with us, not actually here. I think potentially we're the only team with one DP who's in goal and not two or three up front. You know, that's going to take a bit of time to address that situation. And we have to find we are fighting to down the bottom with a bottom group of players, and we have to find a way to pick up results whilst also being a team that tries to play a certain way.
So the notable words that popped out pretty immediately were about being a bottom team with a bottom group of players. Essentially, the thesis of the rather long post-game comments are about the struggles of the team and whether the team is equipped to be successful. Abby, you were there. You asked the question that led to these specifically controversial comments. Did it jump out to you in the moment? What, like, the phrase of a bottom group of players, or was it just, you know, did it fit kind of the surrounding piece?
No, I mean, it definitely jumped out. And you kind of don't really know how to respond to that when a coach calls his players a bottom group. It was weird.
Mr. Connor, post-game comments, people are tired. You're on the road. You've been traveling. It's been a long day. Tough loss. People feel emotional. Sometimes people say things a little bit wrong. Are we overanalyzing a couple words out of a long talk?
I think that's fair. But also, like, I don't want to take, I don't want to put words in anybody's mouth. And the fact that the comments still stand as they stand, like, I don't think I can say anything else about them and speak for coach or say, oh no, he meant something else. Cause I think if he meant something else, he'd have clarified. Like, I can only say so much, really. Maybe it is something where it's like, yeah, after a game, after a tough defeat where a ball bounces in off the post in the 74th minute after you've defended so well for 74 minutes, like, maybe things are running a little hot. But I think the comments are what they are, and as long as they're up, as long as they're being stood by, then I think that's as good as I can do.
When you finished the game broadcast, well, let me tell you, of what I got to watch on Saturday, at the end, 1-0, my feeling was kind of like, not bad. Like, I would love to see a draw or a win, but, like, it wasn't a gutting loss. It wasn't an embarrassing loss. It was surprising to me that, like, this is the one that would lead to some maybe fiery comments. Did you, in finishing the broadcast, did you walk out of it feeling like, well, we gave it a shot, or was it like, ugh?
I think it's the latter, not the former. Because I think when you're defending, it's never casual. Like, there's no such thing as casual defending. When you're defending, your focus is at 11 and you're dialed in, and it exerts so much more energy than attacking, because you're emotionally and mentally just focused on defending. Whereas attacking, it's a little more, all right, you're bombarding forward. It's a little less, I don't want to say focused, because they're still focused, but do you know the word I'm looking for? Like, it's a little less tense.
Yeah.
When you're attacking, and,
well, you're finding some joy in attack, right? There's not a whole defense, especially like this rather extreme kind of bunkering, is about survival and
yeah, your back's up against the wall, and yeah, you're up against your own goal, and Atlanta dominated possession, and they were putting in crosses and dribbling into the box and all that stuff. It was frustrating because you did make it so long, and the Rapids went 74 minutes without conceding, which I think, you know, if you'd pulled Rapids and Atlanta fans on who was going to score first and when it was going to happen, I'm sure all the Atlanta fans would say, all right, it's going to be Atlanta, and it's going to happen in the first 15 minutes. And the Rapids made it six times as long nearly without conceding. And that's what makes it hurt so much more. That's what makes it so much more frustrating. And that's where I think some of that disappointment and a fiery postgame comes from, is the fact that you're 15 minutes and change away from hanging on, from completing the deed.
Yeah.
So I think it was more frustrating than blah. Because the other thing is, before Abby interjects, is you're we're on this losing streak now, and you're trying to just get out of it.
Yeah.
You're in a rut. You're in a hole, and you're climbing up the hole. And this result felt like you had your hand on the edge of the cliff, and you're about to pull yourself out of the rut. And right at the end, you miss something and you fall back down to the bottom of the hole again.
Is it ridiculous in the hunt for like a silver lining to say, at least it was only one, right? We've seen plenty of times this season where one goal, heads hang low, second goal, third goal kind of pour in.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
That wasn't the case.
Yeah, there is no silver lining. There's no silver lining for this one, because it's another loss. Because it's one goal or five goals, you end up with the same amount of points. You end up going home with nothing. The positives are Dylan Cerna has 100 appearances as a Rapid, first homegrown to ever do that. Seb Anderson makes his debut at 16 years old and did a great job of shutting down Barco on Atlanta's left wing. And he even played up against Pity Martinez as well. And he defended him well. Like, the goal didn't come because of a mistake the 16-year-old made. So that's incredible. That's wonderful. But other than that, like, there's no real silver lining where you walk away and said, we were so close, we defended well, we can hang our hat on that. It's just, a loss is a loss.
Well, and I think at this point, like, even if we'd walked out, like, with a tie, it would have kind of been more of a, Oh, well, I mean, at least we didn't lose, as opposed to we came out with a tie.
I think a result.
If we had scored and made a tie, then I think that's a different story than if we walked out with a 0-0.
A nil-nil result there feels like 3 points. Just because you shake your head, but a nil-nil result does feel like 3 points because of where we're at in the standings and because of the way the last few weeks have gone. Where now it's just about ending that streak. It's just about getting back on the right track. Whether that's incrementally with 1 point or taking all 3 points, whatever it is, just to get to the point where you are putting something on the board is going to feel like a victory. And it's going to completely change mentality and mindset and attitude and all of those things.
Well, what I think is
and that,
particularly
this,
frustrating about this game is that Atlanta, this is not the Atlanta team that won the MLS Cup last year. Like, this
not
is a
close.
Good
bottom of the Eastern Conference. I'm very observant. Bottom of the Eastern Conference team that is not scoring goals, that is not winning games. We could have gone in there and won this game. And then after the game, for Coach Hutson to start talking about quality of teams and DPs and all this stuff when it wasn't even a factor in this game.
That's not
like
true.
If he had been talking about this after Seattle, after Orlando, after some of these other games and some of these other teams that he mentioned, I mean, I still don't think it was appropriate to call the players a bottom group of players regardless. But if he's talking about that after one of those games, I get it. But talking about it after this game just makes it sound like he's trying to make up excuses.
No. Atlanta's transfer market value for their team is like $60 million.
But they didn't do anything on the field. Like, they weren't a factor.
They scored.
On Saturday. Darlington Nagbe and Julian Gressel scored.
Okay, so
and
you're going to...
Darlington Nagbe stole the ball from Ezekita.
He intercepted the ball. You're going to discount the effect that Tito Villalba had on that play.
No, you can make the argument
who's
that they have
DP,
an effect by being
a DP
on the
coming
field,
off the bench.
But my point is...
Or Joseph Martinez.
They weren't like getting buckets and getting tons of goals up in there.
Right, but there's still... Like, to say that Atlanta United, like, just because they're off to a slow start this year, like, they're not as good as they were last year.
Off to a bad start. Not a slow start.
Yeah, they're off to a bad start.
They're bad.
We still have twice as many goals scored as they do. But to say that just because they're in a slump, just because they're playing poorly right now means that these guys didn't have an effect on the game or didn't change the game. I mean, that's like saying Kai Kamara didn't change the game just because he didn't score.
Well, that's because he was getting back on defense, clearing balls.
From our view, which you had nearly the same view that we did, Jordan and I in the booth, is when Kai Kamara started sprinting downfield, Gonzalez Perez and Miles, what's his last name? The other center back.
Robinson?
Miles Robinson. They both start sprinting back with gusto because they're like, oh, crap, it's Kai Kamara. Like, just because players don't show up on the stat sheet doesn't mean they don't have an effect on the game.
Well, then that goes back to the argument again. Like, Kai Kamara is not a DP, but he's, like, in the top 10 in scoring in the league. So
he's a very good player.
So we have Kai Kamara.
Yeah, Kai Kamara is a very good player.
So you don't think they could have gotten 3 points on Saturday?
I think the Rapids can get 3 points every time they step out on the pitch.
All right.
3-0 Pits.
Then
I want to get back on the post-game comments. Jess,
I don't think we ever got off the post-game comments.
Well,
so.
I just think we need to dispense with the narrative that Atlanta United is not.
I'm with you in that, like, Atlanta United is a good team.
Yeah, they have so much talent everywhere. I mean, when you can sub on a guy like Tito Villalba and you can sub on Michael Parkhurst, who's an incredible defender. He's a little older now and a little bit slower, but their team is top to bottom, every row. Brad Guzan is a above average MLS goalkeeper. Everyone in their back line is average to above average. Maybe you want to say Miles Robinson has only played 10 games, so we don't know anything about him yet. But Gonzalez Perez is an incredible defender. And Jeff Larinowitz is an incredible midfielder, and he's got, what, like 34,000 minutes in MLS?
Yeah.
And Darlington Nagbe has an MLS Cup, and he's a terrific midfielder, and he's an engine for that team.
If you
Julian Gressel on the right wing
and offered any team to swap rosters with Atlanta United, I think the only team that could realistically hesitate is LAFC.
Seattle's really good.
Yeah, you're correct. It's in there. It's those three, right? Yeah. Every other team is like, yep, I'll take that. Just from the fan perspective, with this, these post-game comments and a bit of the fallout and follow-up from them, like, what was your feeling? Did it bother you?
It bugged the hell out of me, to be honest. I saw on Twitter that in a conversation that there was, like, an implication that he had done a similar thing with the New Zealand players right before he left. And so I started digging. And while I couldn't find anything that specifically like pointed to his remarks about his players before he left, there is a definitive pattern of him at some point, you know, starting with, oh, well, we've got new, we're bringing it in, it's going to be great. And then it goes to, well, we're still new, so we're still learning, we're still... And then towards the end, there's almost always some kind of something like in his commentary that is just little snarky pieces that fully puts the excuses and the blame on other people. You know, he talks a lot about, well, I want this, I want, but there's no, you know, I want to learn, I want to get better, but nothing that really comes to fruition. And these are articles that what I was pulling up last night was all the way from 2009. So we've got, you know, 10 years of articles that show really no effective change in his patterns.
Abby, you wrote an article for Burgundy Wave that I'll say had some emotion behind it. You know, you sounded angry and disappointed. Is that a fair reading? And like, is your optimism like dying?
It's funny you should say that, because I really like, I try not to put a lot of emotion in what I write because I don't want people to accuse me of, well, you're just being a fan and you're just angry and you're just this and you're just that. So I try to use a lot of facts and quotes to support what I'm saying. But yeah, I mean, for me, a lot of the negativity, and it's obvious, it's with the fans, a lot of the negativity is focused right now on Anthony Hudson and the things he said and the things that aren't happening, the things that are happening, all that stuff. I think there's still some, I don't know, like the season's not going well, like nothing's really going well right now, but I wouldn't say that it's like all shot to hell. Like there's still an opportunity to maybe bring in some new personnel and turn things around. And I do think that we have a good group of guys. Like, is it a team that should be competing for the MLS Cup every year? Like, no, certainly not. But there is absolutely no reason why the roster we have couldn't be competing in the middle of the table, like for a playoff line. And maybe they still could. I don't know. Like, I don't get into the mathematical things about that. And I don't
Abby
really care.
Doesn't like simple math.
I don't like
three
math.
And ones. That's
don't
too
like
much.
Math. But no, I mean, I don't know. I think it's really, I'm waiting to see what the front office is going to do. I'm waiting to see they're going to continue to let this happen. And if, you know, are we going to lose at home to Vancouver and then lose to RSL? I mean, maybe that's what the breaking point is going to be. Or maybe there is no breaking point and maybe we're just stuck with him for the rest of the year and they're going to give him a solid couple years to see what he can do. But my optimism is in what's the next step and what's going to happen. And then if nothing happens, then I think we're just going to be stuck where we are.
So do you believe that the players on the roster could put in the work, could show the results on the field, such as to deliver a season that you can be, I don't know about proud of, but like satisfied with?
Yes. Yes.
I think so.
Absolutely.
I think so for sure. Like, but I mean, from the player perspective, like, what do you do when your boss says that about you? Right. Like, how, I don't know. Like, I know they play for the fans and they play for themselves and they're all really dedicated players, but like, what are they supposed to be thinking when their boss says something like that?
I think that's really right. And it's emotional, right? Whenever someone's talking about your performance, there's going to be emotion tied up in it. And at the same time, the, I don't know, literal side of me is like, well, if you're at the bottom of the table, you're the bottom group of players. Like of the players in the potential field, like you're at the bottom right now. Now, maybe you can change that, but I don't know.
Who was it who said you are what your record is? Was it Dennis Green?
I think somebody like that. And
it was an NFL coach.
I get into the, you know, I think we've had debates before, Connor, about like,
I'll debate anybody on anything.
I know that's the truth.
No.
About when we try and have this explanation of like, well, the Rapids were the better team for 70 minutes. It's like, well, the better team wins the game. You can look good. You can have good spells, but you can't, in my opinion, be the better team without winning the game.
It was Bill Parcells.
That's all right. We'll let it pass.
no, you're right. You're right. I agree with that like 50-50. Like I agree that, and soccer is one of those sports, especially where how often do you hear, you know, the better team lost or the better team ended up dropping points. Like soccer just seems to be that sport more so than others because goals are such minor miracles and they can happen on the idiom I'm looking for? Just on the flip of a switch. I don't know. Maybe that's it.
At any time.
They can have you can have a team that parks the bus inside their own 6-yard box and they win 1-0 and they create one expected goal or they create one chance and it just happens on a perfect counterattack. And the other team lofts in 25 shots and they get nothing. And
let me look at Russia in the World Cup.
Yeah, and the better team loses. But at the end of it, if you are the better team, one of your 25 shots or so needs to go in the back of the net.
Yeah.
Or else you're not the better team because you lost. Like, I see both sides of it.
Jess, there was frustration last season with some of these post-game comments and press conferences when things were bad and folks felt like they were hearing the same phrases and the same words. You know, we got to apologize to the fans. They're so great. They deserve better. We're going to try hard, all those things. And people asked and really even demanded for more candidness. Now we got really candid. Is it like taken too far?
No, I mean, we got what we asked for. My issue is not in the candidness of the statement. My issue is with the words itself. Like as I voiced earlier, it's inappropriate. It's not what you, I mean, you still have to maintain some level of professionalism within your candidness. And I think that kind of went out the window.
The other thing is like, what's the topic? What's the subject? If the players and the staff come out and say it's Porrick Smith who comes out and gives us his opinions on the new Avengers movie and he breaks it down for us, like that's a level of candor, but it's about a topic that
I would argue that fans don't necessarily want Hudson to be candid. They want him to take some responsibility.
Ooh, yeah.
So
I think that's true. And that's definitely what people have said this week. But I feel like every talk before this one has been like when I talked to him last week, I feel like what I'm hearing is it's me. I need to have a better plan. We need to better execute the plan. I need to put in a plan that people can execute and make sense and so forth. And so it feels a little disingenuous to me when we're, and I think several people have said this in the conversation of the last few days, like, why is he putting all the blame on the players? Like, up until now, I feel like he's taken almost an implausible amount of the blame.
I disagree.
Okay.
I think he's had his moments where every once in a while he'll say, like, I think you may have been there at the same conversation he was talking to Jake when he said something about it being his fault or whatever. But in most cases, he doesn't do that. And I think it would be beneficial of him to do it after a game because a lot of people don't hear the things that happen after practices and stuff. Like obviously sometimes there are articles and things that come of it, but he needs to say it in the moment when the emotions are high, when everybody's mad, he needs to take responsibility of it right then. And then when he deflects it and starts talking about quality of teams and quality of players and all this other stuff, it looks like he's deflecting it. It looks like he's trying to take the attention away from him. And I mean, maybe he's a guy who knows that his job is on the line and is starting like that. Maybe that's what we're starting to see. He's just kind of grasping for straws to make up excuses.
I was surprised. So it's Tuesday today. The team was off, but there was practice yesterday. I expected, right? There was practice yesterday?
Yes.
Okay. I expected yesterday to see the follow-up article, right? Where somebody gets tapped of like, hey, don't you want to talk to Coach Hudson for a few minutes? And wouldn't you like to ask questions like this? And then they ask the questions and you get the write-up and it's, you know, in the heat of the moment, I chose the wrong words. And like, while we're at the bottom, I believe in the players and the players believe in each other and da 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 da. And that didn't happen. I didn't see anything like that or any commentary from the team or anybody else involved. Did that surprise anybody else? Or was it just like, that's too...
Well, that's why earlier you asked me about the comments and everything. And I said, I don't want to put any words in his mouth. Like if he hasn't clarified them, if he hasn't changed them, then it's what he believes. It's what he thinks. So they stand as they are.
But I'm not sure that anybody went out to practice yesterday to ask him those questions.
It was cold.
So I think tomorrow could be an opportunity for people to talk to him.
Connor, was there anything notable or different about the team? You traveled back on Sunday, right?
Yes, sir.
Was it just the same vibe as normal? Like, everybody's a little tired, more or less keep to yourself.
Yeah, it was pretty similar. The guys pair off the way they do. A lot of Cole and Seb Anderson hanging out. A lot of Cole, Seb, and Sammy Vines.
The
They're a pretty tight-knit group.
Playing their Game Boys.
They're younger than Game Boy Colors. They have like Nintendo Switches now.
It was
kind of the way the whole all of Hartsfield Jackson was. It was a sleepy Sunday morning.
Okay, let's dive in a little deeper to the game itself. A week ago, we were expecting Colorado to travel to Atlanta and have a conservative game plan against those reigning champs. Connor, in his post-game, Frank DeBoer said the Rapids parked two buses, which I definitely never heard before. Was that what you were expecting based on what you saw in practice last week?
It's kind of like a waste of buses, right? You need to economize your buses a little better. There's only 10 guys in the outfield, and if you're putting 10 guys on two buses, like, those are some pretty empty buses.
Well, I think we proved that, right, by our big empty zero on the score sheet.
That's one way to take that. Yeah, it was actually early in the week was when the game plan was a little more noticeable, though people who were at the open practice just didn't pick up on it. Jeffrey?
I didn't pay any attention.
No, you brought your son and you fed him
raisins.
Putting
it out there.
Playing with the kid, we were eating raisins or kicking soccer balls, and then
everything went right over your head.
Abby, in watching the game, was there a part of you that said, like, this is Pablo ball. I know this. It can go okay.
I was with you till like the very end. I don't know. I didn't think it was like going to work particularly well because they need to score goals to win games. And if we saw, you know, we saw in 2016 that it's fine to park the bus and maybe get that magical chance every once in a while. But
the 2016 Rapids didn't like park the bus that much.
Yeah, I feel like people,
like, I think Pablo ball has gone, it's taken on a whole different meaning.
It was very defensive minded.
The hyperbole has gone almost too far. Yeah, but parking the bus is like what the bottom of the table Premier League teams do when they put 11 guys all the way behind the ball and their top line is like at the edge of the box.
Okay,
it's
well
like
then
what you're doing
the
when
Rapids
you're,
park
when
the bus and it wasn't Pablo ball.
Right, just Pablo ball was Pablo ball was a, still a little bit different. Like Baji wasn't back always defending like that, like parking the bus.
Not like Kai Kamara was.
No, Kai stayed up pretty high for the most part.
He had a header multiple times and cleared the ball.
Off a set piece? Because he always comes back on set pieces.
He comes back all the time because he's our number one defender, too.
He's a very tall person.
Jess, as a fan, is it worth parking the bus, shooting for a 0-0 draw in order to bring an end to this losing streak?
Well, I mean, why not? It's a strategy we haven't really tried yet this season, and it worked for Russia pretty decently throughout the World Cup.
Russia
so
didn't park the bus either.
Did you watch Russia play? Because,
yes, I did. And Golovin and who was the other guy? They still played up high. They didn't put 11 guys like all the way behind the ball. They didn't park the bus either. Maybe we have
Let's
different definitions of parking the bus.
Heavily defensive strategy.
Yeah, it was defensive, but it was, you could say the same thing about France, and France didn't park the bus either. France absorbed pressure, and then they would counterattack.
Yeah.
That's different than parking the bus, and that was Russia's strategy more than parking the bus, because parking the bus is like, you are putting everybody in defense, and that's not what Russia did, that's not what France did, that's not what we did.
So how come it didn't work?
Julian Gressel's a magician. And I said this the other day, if the post was square and set around, that ball stays out.
So that's our petition, square posts.
Back in the olden days.
Did you know, speaking of the posts, that when...
We're going to go off on a tangent.
Yeah, now. MLS first started, that there was a discussion about increasing the size of the goal.
Yeah.
Can you imagine how like cartoonish that would be now? As if it's like not hard enough
Can
to
you imagine
build credibility.
How many more bangers we would see?
I don't know.
But what if you just built it like oddly shaped, like
or
a Tetris
two.
Piece, like an L?
Yeah.
Where it goes.
Or like a taller a part in the middle that goes up. You know what I'm saying? Like
yeah.
Like three o'clock and one. Deshaun Brown could score 20 a year if the goal was only twice as high.
You're being mean, though. You need to pick on a new
True
individual.
Facts.
You've picked on Brown enough.
Deshaun Brown does not listen to this podcast.
People who are friends with him do.
Jess, when the goal did go in, did you just feel like, well, this is over?
Yeah, I really did.
Like, oh, that's some pessimism and some cynicism like I've never heard. We still had 15 more minutes to find the equalizer. We just didn't.
Jess, what was your answer to that question?
Thanks, Jeff. you know, honestly, I feel like up until that point, there was this feeling that, you know, hey, we might actually be able to pull points out of this, whether it was one, whether it was three, there was hope, you know, that we could do that. And it kind of felt like when that went in, there was just like, I don't know, when you squeeze the balloon as the air is going out and it kind of squeals away.
Yeah.
Kind of how it felt.
We kind of created some good chances there when we opened up a little bit more. Mezquita had some good looks. Kai Kamara came so close to having another look, and
well, I'm not saying,
for whatever reason, he stopped dribbling.
I'm not saying they didn't stop fighting, because I mean, that's what they've done every
fighting. It's that they came close to scoring.
Between the game performance itself, the post game, the kind of ongoing discussion, right? That's been on ESPN, that's been on MLS Soccer, and so forth. I've seen this week fans more angry than I recall seeing in the past few seasons. It is frequent that Rapids fans experience disappointment or frustration, but this is one of the first times I remember seeing just, you know, not just the usual suspects who are always pissed off about this and that, but people who I've never seen before on like Rapids 96 Twitter or whatever posting about how angry they are. I had this theory a week ago that Atlanta, Vancouver, RSL was like a three games, like essentially make or break. Is that still true? Like, does it feel like we're going into a two game homestand that if it doesn't go well, things could get even uglier?
Well, first off, Jeffrey, and a little more interesting, I think, is what are your thoughts? You're pretty even keeled, rational guy. You're older. You have children. You've had time to mellow out in your life. What makes you angry? I've never seen you holler. Are you hollering?
I don't get angry about sports.
So when you get angry, that's when we'll know it's real.
Yeah, there'll never be a time where I'm angry about
it. When's the last time you threw a remote?
Never.
When's that children in the house, Connor?
Right.
Children will make you angry, but it doesn't involve remotes.
He just throws his children instead.
It involves belts.
The part that, you know, I don't think
like
sports,
I want to watch a game with you just to watch your reactions.
Yeah, it's very quiet.
Is it really?
You know?
Like you just like you
anything.
Sink into the sofa and you just
yeah,
kind of take
like
it all in?
Focus, yeah.
What makes you lean forward and like lean forward onto your legs and like you're holding your hands, you're praying and you're like, we got to get this and you're stressed.
Yeah, like the last 2 minutes of a game that we're actually leading. So it's a rare occurrence, but that would be the most stressful.
Let's say your voice right now is at about a 3.
Yeah.
When do you get to 7 or above?
With children.
So when we score, are you like a silent shake of the fist and then you go back to minding your own business?
More or less. At home, if I'm watching on TV, I don't find TV soccer to be engaging, you know.
What is it like to watch sports like that?
It sounds dull, Jeffrey.
No, yeah. That's not what I meant.
That's exactly what you meant.
No, it's
own
not.
It.
No, I just
what's
can't
it like to be
wrap
you?
My head around not having high blood
what's
pressure
like
during
for
a sporting event.
Not to go in hiding in the middle of a game.
Yeah,
It's just not that serious. Like the rest of life is stressful. It's just, sports are supposed to be fun.
You sound like Damian Lillard. Did you see his quote?
Yes.
Where he said, "This
can
isn't
you,
pressure."
Yes, this was beautiful. I thought
I don't have it verbatim, but
yeah,
I know the gist of what
this
it said.
Is a Timberwolves player.
No,
who,
Portland Trailblazers.
Trailblazers, excuse me. Who was asked about pressure in the NBA playoffs, and he said along the lines of, "Like I don't feel pressure is people working trying to make ends meet. Single moms feel pressure trying to do right for their kids. I get to play a game for a living. I don't feel pressure."
Jose Mourinho has said something similar to in his past, which reminds me of that. I think it was the Onion. Who had a headline article thing once?
It's probably
said,
the nutmeg.
It was that horrible feeling when the person you hate makes a great point. That's how I felt about it when I saw Jose Mourinho's. Because what a person.
Here's the place, like to answer your question, I think the place that I get frustrated with fan reaction of whether it's sports in general or Rapids community specifically is I think we take too short-sighted a view of things. And when you talk about like, oh, we just need to add DPs, right? Like we've had DPs, they haven't worked out. Like just the fact that we're going to add a number 9, a number 10, whatever, like slow down, right? We wanted people were lighting the torches for Pablo to go. And it's like, you got what you wanted. Now here you are, right? And now it's like, oh, we want Hudson out. It's like, who do you think really wants to take over a team at the bottom of the table with a small budget, with a small fan base that is all pissed off? Like, this is not an appealing job. I would think you would have to reach to like USL college level type coaches, and you're not going to get somebody, you're not going to pull in somebody that you are like, oh, I can't believe that Matias Almeida part two is not coming to coach the Rapids.
And I think that's part of where the fan anger comes from, because it's very specific and it's very directed at Hudson right now, because everybody thinks that that's the solution. Fire Hudson and then everything will be fine. So I think that's kind of where all this anger, like why we're seeing so much more anger, because it's focused and it's directed at one specific thing versus like, everything sucks, I'm just going to give up, team sucks, front office sucks, blah, blah, blah.
Also, Jeffrey, it's just fun to go watch a game and like have fun. Like, it's not supposed to be Lollapalooza where you lose your mind, yeah. But one of the best times I've had in Denver was when a couple years ago the Patriots beat the Steelers interception in the end zone, and it was terrific. And I was out at a bar. I ended up standing on a couch, jumping up and down in public like a fool. But it was wonderful.
I can picture.
The bar was dead quiet. The bar was dead quiet because everyone was rooting for the Steelers because, you know, like they do. And I had this amazing moment where I found myself, I looked down, I'm jumping on a couch in public right now. I've lost my mind. But it was just fun. It's just fun to be emotional.
I feel like there's a Tom Cruise reference
in something that doesn't matter. Like, if you want to be emotional about politics, you'll pull your hair out. And when things don't go your way, which they rarely ever do, like, you're going to be sad and frustrated, and you're going to feel like there's real world consequences to it. Whereas with sports, if the ball doesn't go in the back of the net, like you said, it's not that deep. You just go back into work on Monday. But when it goes right, you get to go crazy and it's fun.
So this is the thing to me when we talk about like the narrative arc of the team and losing seasons, winning seasons, games and so forth. I would like to see the team make the playoffs. I don't care. I would like to see the team win the cup. I don't really care.
Bro, what are you doing as a sports fan?
I want to go to a game and have fun. And okay. It's not fun.
I believe that nobody's fandom should be policed. So I would want to take back where I criticized the last 15 minutes, just the last sentence. I stand by the rest of it. You can enjoy soccer however you want. It's just, I guess it's just so foreign to me because I'm so used to, I mean, I was watching the World Cup last year. We were in Vancouver and the equipment bus goes early. So the stadium's empty. The team doesn't arrive for a couple more hours and they were playing Croatia versus Denmark, which went to penalties, and they were playing it on the Jumbotron. And I'm sitting there in the booth just watching this unfold. I'm not Croatian. I'm not Danish. I was on the edge of my seat, standing up, hollering in the middle of an empty BC place at this sports event, just because it's sports. It's fun. And it's fun to be engaged in something that doesn't matter at all.
Yeah. And I think that's totally
right. We need to watch a game together.
And that's where I'm saying the part that makes me so disappointed is like, I spend a lot of money on 5-season tickets. I've done that. This is, I think, the 4th or 5th season in a row.
And you're saying, like, you don't care who wins or loses. You just want to go out there and see high-quality soccer, and you want there to be fireworks, and you want there to be goals.
I want to feel engaged. I want to believe that the game is worth watching a whole 90 minutes, not just, like, protest staying because I refuse to leave early, right? And most games, like, this season, every game my family's left at halftime because they're bored. And you look at our section, it's empty. There are honestly like 100 people in our whole section.
The Portland game was pretty good.
The Portland game was pretty good, and they also left because it was freezing and it snowed.
Just bad luck.
And it's not the experience that I want my kids to have of how to enjoy this game. Like, I got to go to RFK, and you're jumping with the Barra Brava. The whole stadium is shaking. Yes, there are raccoons.
I was going to say, there might be a raccoon that falls on your head.
It was sketchy, but it was so fun. And I was excited every week when we were there. When we got done, I couldn't wait to go to the next one.
You don't care about the end of the scoreline.
Right.
You care about the experience.
Right.
You need to go to Kansas City. You need to go to LAFC. You need to go to Portland.
And that's the thing. The most fun I had last season was going to the LAFC RSL playoff game. And it was like, I forgot how exciting it is to be in a stadium that is like focused, it's full, people are having fun, they're like, they want to be here and they're excited to be here, you know? And it's just like, I just want that for us and this
community. Have you ever seen Fever Pitch?
No.
It's the Jimmy Fallon and
Barrymore?
Drew Barrymore. Yes. It was Jimmy Fallon and Drew Barrymore, and Jimmy Fallon has these great Red Sox season tickets. And the reason he has them is because they were passed down from his grandfather to him, but he talks about how he fell in love with the Red Sox. And they're these lovable losers, and they're never going to win because it was before 2004. Like, they're never going to win anything, but you go because it's your team, and there's this magic of the ballpark and all that stuff. So that's you.
Yeah.
You have a romanticized vision of soccer, and it has nothing to do with who wins or loses.
Well, it's you wanna feel like there's a chance, right? And
what's the point of there being a chance if you don't care who wins?
You care who wins, but it's just not the most important thing. Like, it's not the most important thing on the aggregate. Like, I would like when we went to the playoffs in 2016, that playoff game was probably the most fun I've ever had watching the Rapids, right? And it's like, can you believe some people have this every game? Abby, the Whitecaps sit on 6 points with just one win from the first 9 games, putting them 11th in the West, 23rd across the league. This is numerically the best chance we have to win a game, right?
I guess. I mean, it looks like it. They're a terrible team. They're coming to our place.
Their record is terrible.
See, I don't necessarily think they're terrible. Their record is terrible.
There's a difference. But like you were talking about earlier, Jeffrey, you are what your record is.
Yeah.
And I do think that for whatever reason, like, I don't necessarily think we have like this big rivalry with the Whitecaps, but it's always one of those games where you just never know what's going to happen, because I feel like one of us always gets that tying goal at the very end and all kinds of things happen.
Or Joe Mason forces an own goal. Danny Wilson plays out of his mind.
You just never know. You never know what's going to happen when Vancouver comes.
And we win on Canada Day.
Jess, would you rather see a defensive game plan and try and pull out a draw at home, or go ahead, play aggressive and risk taking a loss?
You know, at this point, you know, we are 9 games winless this season. Why not just pull out all the stops and go hard?
Connor, what have you seen from Vancouver in the recent weeks?
They are improving. They lost their first few matches, but they also have this exciting player from Asia. I think he's Korean.
Yeah,
that's correct. Wong In Bom.
Mm-hmm.
Dude's electrifying. They had a Friday night match at home against the Galaxy, and I think the Galaxy ended up winning it 2-1, or maybe it was 1-1 draw. But Wong In Bom he's terrific. Like, he's worth the price of admission on his own. And they actually beat LAFC at home, and they did it by kind of bunkering in a little bit and playing on the counter, which maybe that'll be something that they do to try to negate Kamara and Rubio since they'll be on the road. That's probably what I'd be looking for. But Hwang In Bom, maybe Zach McMath, he'll get a start.
I'm curious. I like that Vancouver makes some different choices around player recruitment, and if they end up being the team in MLS that goes to Asia and finds players worth bringing in, I think that would be really cool. Like,
well, Seattle has Kim Keehee.
Yeah. So between outside of those two, there's very few, right? Yeah. Overall, MLS.
It'd be nice if the Borussia Dortmund midfielder Shinji Kagawa, he's been rumored to be wanting to leave Dortmund, or, you know, maybe not even wanting, being forced out of Dortmund. But I guess his top choices were Fenerbahce and then a team in La Liga. So he would immediately be one of the best players in the league.
Abby, when we start to think about the Rapids game plan, is there anything left to try with lineup and formation this week?
I think they should just go back to the formation they had before.
Which one?
I don't like the bunker tactic. I don't think it's super effective, because once that other team gets a goal, then it all goes out the window anyway, and then you have to start pressing forward and doing all that other stuff. So I just want to see them figure out the center back situation and just continue playing the way that they have been playing. They've been scoring goals. It's been exciting soccer until, you know, the other team scores. But I don't know. I don't think they've been doing anything necessarily wrong. They just need to figure out that back line situation. And maybe a 5 back is the solution, but I'm not into it.
Given what we know right now, everybody on the defense, except Courtney Ford, of course, seems healthy. Do you have any reason to think we're going to see anything new or interesting back there? Like, is it going to be, well, I guess, who you put in your center back spots?
I mean, I guess to be fair, like, I talk a lot about the center backs. Everybody talks about the center backs. We know the center backs haven't been playing well, but it's not all on them. Like, it's because somebody gets burned up the side,
yep,
and then they make a mistake. So there's like, or the midfield's not doing what they're supposed to be doing, and then the ball gets in places it shouldn't be. Like, they're, everyone's making mistakes. So everyone needs to like get it together and get their focus. So yeah, like, even I talk a lot about the center backs, but it's not necessarily them. But Declan Wynn, despite what others may think, I think he is one of our strongest center backs this season. So I am okay with him.
Can you believe
being back there?
Interesting.
Never thought I would say that.
This is one of our themes of the show. I feel like every week we're like boosting Declan Wynn.
He's
rewind a year.
He's been doing all right.
Like, excuse me. Why would you do that? But yeah, I think he's done all right. And the part that I think the defense, part of where the defense has struggled to me is in emergency defending, right? In closing down somebody who has slipped through. And when you have big guys, not the fastest big guys, yeah, there's no closing them down, right? And I would take a little Declan Wynn speed in the back to mix it up in there. Jess, what are you most worried about going into this match?
I think mostly just dumb mistakes, you know, boiling up frustrations and it all boiling over into like a card or suspension or an injury or just dumb mistakes.
I guess interesting question there. Like, does Jack Price automatically come back in the lineup now that he's off suspension?
Like, if
without any inside information, I say yes.
Yeah, yeah. You would think he makes it somewhere in the midfield for Abby. As we've kind of said on and on, like, the fan community is mad, barring the, you know, the extreme case. If it's a 6-0 loss, yeah, okay, people are. But in kind of typical outcomes, let's say it's a draw or it's a 2-1 loss or a 3-1 loss or something, can things get worse amongst the fan community, or is that just kind of continuing as it is?
I mean, I think, and maybe this is me putting some personal, like, in my personal opinion, getting emotional over here. Watch out. I think RSL is the game.
Yeah.
I think when they come here, I think that's the game where if Hudson's still here after Vancouver and that game goes poorly, I think that everything's going to, it's just going to be very bad. I think Vancouver is going to be like if we lose, it'll just be like, well, there's another game, but we better beat RSL next week. And if we win, obviously it's good, and a draw is whatever what it is.
I think you're right. I think it's easy to overlook that amongst the season ticket holder base or the kind of casual Rapids fan base, I think there are a lot of people who don't pay attention to road games. And whether it's you don't pay attention to the results, you definitely don't track down which Altitude 6 network it's currently broadcasting
on. Well, if they're like you, they definitely don't pay attention to the results.
Yeah. But that RSL game, they've been taught, this is a game you pay attention to, mm-hmm, right? And so people, the weather is going to be nice for that game. People are going to
Why would you say that? Yeah. Don't you? Why would you say that?
It's mid-May, I have
faith. It snows on Mother's Day. Last year, it snowed on May 18th.
The year I moved, 2017, May 19th, it snowed when I moved here.
So the problem
is me.
Again, is you, Connor. That's one of our other theses from podcast episode to episode.
I wish I had this power.
Connor, what does it take for this week to start the turnaround?
3 points, Jeffrey. 3 points.
Any 3 points, a 1-0 win, it's good.
Yeah,
enough.
Anything. Right now, you're just at the point where you're trying to cauterize the wound, and anything we could do to stop the bleeding, which I think is going to happen. I think we're going to have a fun Friday night atmosphere. I think it's going to be one of those weird midweek games where, like we were talking about with Atlanta, like, sometimes when it's not a Saturday night, the routine's a little bit different, and the vibe of everything is just a little bit different because you're out of your routine. I think that could be... that could be something that plays a factor, and maybe the crowd's a little more into it. Maybe the guys are a little more hyped up for it, whatever it is. And then Vancouver comes in, and they played on the road good. They played on the road well when they played down in Orlando, but they ended up losing at the very end thanks to, you guessed it, Nani. Our favorite.
Discipline for embellishment.
Our favorite Orlando City player. And so they're good on the road. They know what they're doing, and I think they're constantly improving. But this is also, it's got to be. This is like, Kai Kamara's going to go off. Diego Rubio's going to go off. Somebody's gonna have a play where it's just like, it energizes everybody and everything.
Yeah.
And remember, Benny Failhaber scored first against DC, but it was kind of a weird goal. It was hectic. We're going to have just a really clean goal. Just an absolute golazo from outside the box, upper 90. Going to have a beautiful shot from John Babiak where he gets the keeper at full extension.
Shout out.
Not getting the ball. And yeah. It's going to send everybody up in flames.
I want to see.
And we're going to ride that.
I want to see Diego Rubio on that ball. I feel like he's had so many off the post.
Rubio's more of a poacher than a.
Yeah, that's fair.
Bangers.
I just want. I'd love to see him have a game. Right?
Honestly, I think it could be Seb Anderson should he play again. The young man tried it in Atlanta. He tried it on a deflection that fell to him.
So you're saying he's the new Dylan Serna.
It fell to him.
Shooting from 30 yards.
Outside the box, and he put it into like the fifth row. And I said on the broadcast, I was like, sometimes, you know, ambition is the enemy of success.
Yeah.
But we applaud the young man for his courage.
In your first start, you got to.
In your first start.
It's the heat check.
To have the podcast appropriate phrase. To go out there and do that and to take that shot without hesitation, I love that.
All right, so we got by Friday, we're going to discover our positivity. We're going to be ready for that home victory.
It's going to come in the form of a cooker.
We're going to get to that in just a minute. Quick recap from last week. We did some over-unders. And
that was last week. No one was here from last week. Get rid of them. Throw them out.
I'm here, okay?
We had Jeffrey, not about you.
Over-under. Half a red card in the match. It was under. Which
no reds.
Jordan and Eugene had. Over under 5.5 total goals.
Under,
which is Jordan, Joseph, and myself. Over under 30 game minutes for Dylan Serna.
Under, but not by much.
Oh, that was
he came
close
on.
One. Came on, but not didn't get 30. Tommy Smith played the whole game, so we were over 70 game minutes. And finally, over under 0.5 points for the Rapids, which unfortunately Joseph and I were correct on this week.
And Joseph's just real negative in here.
Yeah, that's true. I guess he was under on most everything except for red cards. He was looking to see. I guess it's still negative.
I'll have to invite him back next time, I guess.
So tonight, I want to try something a little bit different. We're going to talk about a moment of greatness for the Rapids to win.
It's going
to
be Jeffrey carrying 4 Cokes and 2 hot dogs and 3 fries.
Nah. I don't buy that DSGP food. Have you tasted it before?
No.
They have fish and chips now.
The fish and chips are good, but they're the kids so don't good. Like
We've it. We've had fish so. And chips forever.
No, they just got came last year.
The fish and chips. Are
maybe forever for you.
Yeah.
But.
I just assume if it's there when I got here, gone. It's been there forever. They're at Pepsi Center, though.
I know.
I know you two are going to just be free snacking up in the press box, so don't even lie. For the Rapids to win, it is going to take a moment
3 points.
Of greatness. Give me the name of a player who you're expecting to be a difference maker that gets it done against Vancouver and why. I'm going to start with Jess.
I'm going with Kai. He's been pushing hard all season long. So, I mean, he's been making differences up to this point. So, why not?
Kai Kamara is a smart choice. Kai Kamara is actually my player to watch for Tailgate Live because I want to see what he can do. His goal streak ended at 4, and now I want to see how he comes back after it ended. You know, that fire is still going to be there. He's like, all right, I got to get back on track. But I think the moment of greatness, she's already said Kai Kamara, then I will say Benny Failhaber. I think Benny Failhaber took a rest against Atlanta, didn't play the whole 90 minutes, so I think he's going to come out strong. 2 or 3 assists, maybe a goal in there as well. I think it's going to be
2 or 3 assists and a goal?
And I think he's going to be MLS Player of the Week. And then I think he might get like a goal from the penalty spot.
And then a celebratory coffee on Tuesday. Abby?
Wow. I'm going to say Kai Kamara.
She already said Kai Kamara. Like, say something else.
So
be
did
different.
You.
No, then I said
you
Benny Failhaber. Say something interesting. Be different.
I'm about to say something interesting. Shut up.
She is backing me up.
Be
Leave
yourself.
Her alone.
I am going to say Kai Kamara, but he's going to make the difference because he's going to clear the ball off the line so from the other side.
She's talking about center back Kai Kamara.
Yes. Center back Kai Kamara is going to clear the ball off the line and save a goal and then go down and score one on the other end. And
all in the same play.
He's going to do it all.
In the same play.
He's going to like clear it so high.
To himself.
And then sprint down.
Yes.
Settle it. Put it in the net.
Obvious. Against Zach McMath.
Now, I will admit that this is more of like a hope.
We don't want your moment of greatness, Jeffrey. We've had our threes.
I am very interested to hear your moment of greatness.
As am I.
He doesn't even care about the final score. Who cares?
I want to see Kellen Acosta have a game where you go like, this is the Kellen Acosta we were hoping for, you know, because I think it's there. I think he's had a tough run in Dallas and honestly here in Colorado. And my hope is that it's like a sleeping giant situation, that he can have a game, two, three games, and start building some momentum. Things turn around. Obviously, we wallop Salt Lake the following week, and then we start to say, like, hey, maybe we can do something here.
I just want
to
see somebody. I don't want to get ahead of ourselves here for next week, but I just want to see somebody put Kyle Beckerman into the spin cycle and just make him look silly.
Listeners,
like I want his body to be going one way, and then he like tries to turn and his feet get stuck and he's like his ankles like break, not literally, okay, but you know the term, like break his ankles, you know what I mean, figuratively. Yeah. I just want that to happen so I can call it as it happens.
Okay.
But didn't Kellen Acosta was like our only two shots on goal?
Yeah.
In Atlanta? That's not true.
He had two shots on goal.
That's great, but they weren't the only two.
How many did we have? Three?
Three or four, because Mezquita had one.
Okay.
That's the embers.
In the first half.
No. For his breakout game this week.
I think so.
Charcoal, you don't just put the charcoal out there, light it, and then start grilling. You got to let the charcoal heat up.
Thank you for elaborating on that.
When you start it, it's actually very hot, right, with all the lighter fluid and stuff.
Everybody knows how charcoal
works. Well, and Acosta, didn't he score a goal in his first game? This is perfect.
Yes.
This is perfect.
Yeah.
I'm into it.
All right.
So we came out hot, then you cooled down.
I'm glad we're good at prognosis.
Listeners, we'd love to hear if you have predictions for a moment of greatness, either on Twitter at Endline Podcast or on the Rapid subreddit.
But we don't want your feedback, so keep your negative comments to yourself.
No.
Or direct them
just
to
that
at
one person.
Abby Mood.
At Abby Mood on Twitter. That's it for episode 11 of the Endline. For myself, Jess, Abby, Connor, our production crew of Michael, Paul, and Nick. Thanks for listening and have a great week.